Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, June 24th. I'm Jordan Pangelinian, reporting for KMUD.
And I'm Lauren Schmidt. In tonight's news, predator at large in Fort Bragg after home invasion assault. Trump rescinds protections on 59 million acres of national forest to expand Big Beautiful Bill. And Congress denied briefing on Israel-Iran conflict. Congressman Huffman responds.
Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up.
The following story contains content that may be triggering or inappropriate for some of our listeners. On the Mendocino Coast, the Fort Bragg Police Department is asking for the public's assistance in locating a suspect currently on the loose in Fort Bragg after they allegedly broke into a home and sexually assaulted a resident. Sergeant McLaughlin with the FPPD shares more.
On June 21st, 2025, around 3 o'clock in the morning, officers were dispatched to the area of the 400 block of South Harrison Street for a report of a sexual assault that occurred. Initially, the investigation revealed that the subject had knocked on the victim's window and forced entry into the residence and then sexually assaulted the victim. Law enforcement at the time reviewed surveillance footage in the area and observed the subject to be a male adult wearing a neck gaiter-style mask, hooded sweatshirt, leggings, and last seen in the vicinity of South Harrison Street and Hazel Street between 1:30 and 3:30 a.m.
When asked if the victim and the suspect knew each other prior to the assault, he stated,
"Based on our investigation, it does not appear that the suspect was known to the victim."
At this time, there is no known motive aside from sexual assault. The suspect is still at large and is described as a white male adult between 5'7 and 6', weighing approximately 160 to 180 pounds. He was last seen wearing a beige sweatshirt, shorts, and leggings. The sergeant stated that officers canvassed the area searching for the suspect and contacted neighbors for surveillance footage. However, they are hoping others in the area will submit tips that lead to an arrest.
We have a public portal open where if you go to our Facebook page, there's a link, or you can use the QR code and submit digital evidence. That includes video, audio, photographs, screenshots, any type of digital media you can upload to it. And that immediately alerts the investigating officer they've received something, and all the other investigating officers have access to that to review as well.
Until the suspect is apprehended, the sergeant says that while he is hesitant to declare an ongoing threat to public safety, there is always a possibility the suspect could offend again. He urges all on the Mendocino Coast to remain on alert, and if a stranger knocks on your door or window in the middle of the night, to report it immediately to law enforcement.
It takes everyone to solve these kinds of crimes. We're always looking for new leads. We like the community to stay vigilant. If you see something, report it. Nothing is too minor. You hear something at night, you see somebody walking down the street that shouldn't be there, give us a call. Officers are on 24/7. Non-emergency number, 707-964-0200. We'll give you direct access to our dispatch. Of course, if it's an emergency or something is happening, dial 911 immediately. But yeah, we appreciate everyone's assistance in this, and we're working hard to follow all the leads we can.
You can see a photo of the suspect at kmud.org. In Humboldt County, the Eureka Police Department issued a public safety advisory following a recent sexual assault in their district. On June 18th, EPD patrol officers responded to a report of a sexual assault that had just occurred. According to police, the survivor reported that a food service delivery driver arrived at their residence with an order, forced his way inside, and made unwanted sexual contact. During the investigation, officers located the suspect, 27-year-old Arda Kilzelay, who was arrested and booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility. Earlier Tuesday afternoon, EPD spokesperson Laura Montagna issued a press release describing the incident as involving an alcohol delivery driver who allegedly used ID verification as a pretext to gain entry into the home. Eureka Police Chief Brian Stevens added, quote, "We are deeply concerned about this incident and want to assure our community that we are taking this matter very seriously. The safety of our residents is our top priority. While this appears to be an isolated event, we are asking the public to take extra precautions when accepting deliveries, especially those involving alcohol and ID verification," close quote. The press release would continue by outlining recommended safety tips, including confirming the name and photo of your delivery driver through the app or website. EPD encourages community members to stay vigilant and report any similar incidents. For updates and additional safety information, you can visit eurekapd.net.
A coastal flood advisory for the northern Humboldt coast indicates that onshore winds and tides will combine to generate flooding of low areas along the shore. KMUD News spoke to Zahira Velis, a meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Eureka, to bring you the latest update.
So far, we have a quieter weather for this week with temperatures warming up for the interior, getting drier as well. While the coastal area will see everyday coastal stratus, struggling to clear out, but probably some sunshine at a certain point during the afternoon by tomorrow, and moving quickly back to inland during late afternoon. We are expecting a series of offshore waves continually moving across the area. Is there dry, just enhancing some west-northwest winds across the channels that will probably continue to bring localized elevated fire weather concerns for the interior, for those areas with low relative humidity in the mid-teens to low 20s for these days. We'll continue to see this by mid to late week. Temperatures seems like would be relatively similar every day. A little bit warmer for tomorrow and a few degrees lower, but by Thursday and a rebound by Friday. But generally, it looks like temperature for the interior in the mid-80s into low 90s possible for Friday. And for the weekend, it seems like we're going to have a heat wave across the area where temperature over across the interior will likely to be in the 90s. Coastal areas will remain in the upper 50s to low 60s, and there's some potential for mid-60 if the stratus clear out quickly across the area. For tonight, tides, we have a keen tide for this day. For tonight, we're expecting, we have a prediction of tides at 11:18, the high tide of 8.19 foot. But there is an anomaly around right now, over a half of a foot, that will take it close to advisory criteria, bringing some floating concerns of low-lying areas around Humboldt Bay. That includes parks and roads with isolated closure expected, and in the Jackson Ranch Road in the Acadia Bottom. So consider that if you have things outside of you are expecting to drive through, not drive over the waters.
Velis encourages people in the areas of the King Salmon region and the Arcata Bottoms to take extra caution. For more information, visit weather.gov/EKA.
The California Department of Fish and Wildlife has updated on its ocean salmon season as the limited recreational opener caught its limit early. However, they announce it will reopen in September. California's June 7th through 8th ocean salmon opener was the first opportunity to fish for ocean Chinook salmon in state waters since 2022. While the bite was slow in areas like Shelter Cove, anglers reported strong activity in San Francisco Bay and in San Luis Obispo. According to CDFW, an estimated 9,165 salmon were landed by the 10,500 anglers during the two-day season. That catch met the summer harvest guideline of 7,000 Chinook, prompting an early closure of the remaining summer dates. However, a fall season is scheduled to open September 4th through 7th, with the potential of adding additional openings if harvest limits allow. For a more in-depth look, KMA News spoke with CDFW staff about the ocean salmon season. We'll bring you that full report later this week. In the meantime, for updates on regulations and openers, you can visit wildlife.ca.gov/ocean salmon or call the Salmon Hotline at 707-576-3429.
The Trump administration at the beginning of its term indicated at first that they were going to get rid of the roadless rule for the Tongass National Forest in Alaska, which has some of the most significant old growth on our federal public lands still left. And then in the last 24 hours has said, we're going to get rid of the roadless rule everywhere else in the lower 48.
You just heard Tom Wheeler, the executive director of EPIC, spoke to KMUD less than 24 hours after the announcement from the Trump administration that they would be rescinding a roadless rule that protects America's oldest growth forest. This decision is something that aligns with Trump's executive order, Unleashing Prosperity Through Deregulation, and the executive order to bring immediate expansion of America's timber productions, signed into law on January 31st and March 1st. This is less than 5% of the old growth forest that remains.
So Trump, in his second term, has issued an executive order in which he basically said, look, I want to maximize the amount of logging that can occur on federal public lands. And here in Northwest California, that means predominantly Forest Service lands. And so he directed all parts of his administration to review the rules and to execute new rules to allow for as much logging as possible. The Forest Service has come back and said, you know, we believe that we can increase logging by 25% on federal public lands in the next 4 years. And we are going to do everything within our power to make that possible. And that means speeding up timelines, creating what are called good neighbor agreements with private entities to, you know, have the private entities kind of perform some of the roles the Forest Service usually would. It's paring back the application of the National Environmental Policy Act, which requires environmental analysis for things like timber sales. It's not changing the law necessarily, but changing the way that the law is applied. And so with this in mind, the Trump administration has said, you know, look, we're going to want to increase extractive use of public land, timber, oil and gas, what have you. The Trump administration is also now going forward with a number of other ways that they can increase extractive use of public land. The first is that we're monitoring that it's kind of come out the last day is a proposal to rescind the roadless rule.
The roadless rule is a 2001 Clinton administration decision that would protect areas of federal public land that could be eligible for designation as wilderness, meaning that they maintain sufficient wilderness characteristics and that they are unroaded.
And so in these inventoried roadless areas, extractive use like timber sales and things like road construction are generally impermissible.
Rescinding this rule would open up new acreage to logging. This is often in areas with desirable old-growth wood. These lands have been protected and could potentially become wilderness areas.
So we are watching this with concern. This is, frankly, a battle that has been going on since the creation of the Roadless Rural in 2001 with Republican administrations like the Bush administration and the Trump administration in both its terms seeking to dismantle it. And Democratic administrations generally attempting to protect it. So we have heretofore been very successful as a conservation movement in getting the courts to defend the wilderness rule. And should anything actually occur, should the Trump administration move forward with a final rule to dismantle it, we will see them in court. And that is a guarantee. This will be well litigated by some of the best and brightest legal minds that the conservation movement has to offer. And so I think that, you know, while it is a threat, I feel confident that we will be able to continue to defend these roadless areas.
Wheeler tells KMUD News that the Trump administration is expanding resource extraction on public lands and limiting public access in order to use the land for other purposes afterward, what could be known as the Big Beautiful Bill.
In Trump's budget bill, the One Big Beautiful, whatever it's called, there is a proposal largely generated by Senator Mike Lee of the state of Utah to require the federal government to sell off public land. So Senator Lee claimed that this is to combat housing shortages and the housing crisis that many communities now face. But it doesn't seem like it's necessarily limited to that. And so it would direct the sale of many millions of acres of public lands across the United States, and specifically also calls out California as one of those areas that would be subject to this public land sell-off requirement.
The Senate parliamentarian who administers the rules of the Senate has ruled that this is not pertinent to the budget and would need 60 votes and could not pass with a simple majority.
This does not mean that the Senate won't continue to try to push forward with the public land sell-off. They have ignored the Senate parliamentarian in the past, although that is rare. It is a concern because Senator Lee continues to say that he is undeterred in his efforts and that he's just getting started. So as Senator Lee is undeterred in trying to sell off public lands, we are undeterred in fighting him. And I think that one of the things that's most heartening is that the Senate and Senator Lee has faced increased bipartisan opposition, including four Republican senators and Republican representatives as well, and in addition, backlash from hunters, anglers, hikers, climbers, and all other kind of outdoor lovers across the country.
Some leaders are already feeling the pushback of this executive order. Senator Mike Lee of Utah is one who has already rolled back on his own proposal.
In response to this, Senator Lee is feeling the pressure, and he has started to roll back his own proposal. So now he has said he's working on updating language that would only sell off lands under the Bureau of Land Management and not the Forest Service, and only within 5 miles of population centers, and create something called freedom zones. No one knows what a freedom zone is. We think that this would still be subject to the Senate parliamentarian's rule that it would require 60 votes. And at present, I don't think that he can count 60. But this is the kernel of a new destructive and dangerous idea to sell off public lands to try to, generate revenue or to allow for more extractive use. So, it is a seed. The seed has been planted, and we think it's a noxious weed, and hopefully we can stamp it out before it starts to fruit and flower.
KMUD News will update you as the story develops. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.
In state news, experts examine ethics of lethal animal population control in California. Suzanne Potter reports.
Government agencies kill more than a million animals each year, primarily to protect livestock or endangered species. But criticism is mounting. In the old-growth forests of Northern California, Oregon, and Washington, the U.S. Geological Survey has shot more than 3,000 barred owls because they threaten the endangered spotted owl. USGS wildlife biologist David Weens says they've been successful in stabilizing spotted owls.
The science was quite clear that lethal control of barred owls did arrest the long-term population declines of spotted owls. However, we did not see an increase in spotted owl populations during the experiment.
This year, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is planning to scale up the program to a 30-year cull of barred owls. However, some experts say lethal control programs may do more harm than good. William Lynn is an ethicist in the Marsh Institute at Clark University in Massachusetts and the founder of PanWorks, an animal ethics think tank.
It will not knock down the number of barred owls over time. It will just temporarily reduce the population loss amongst spotted owls that will continue to lose territory, continue to lose population as habitat destruction and development occurs.
Professor Jeremy Bruscotter with the Ohio State University in Columbus has studied changes in people's attitudes toward lethal control of animal populations. He says more people have come to see animals as morally relevant rather than as a resource to be exploited.
Non-lethal measures of control have 2 to 3 times more support than lethal measures of control on average. So people want others to start by trying to live with animals rather than just default to killing them.
In 2023, the Federal Department of Wildlife Services killed more than 1.4 million animals, including beavers, whose dams are blamed for flooding, double-crested cormorants, which pressure fisheries, and coyotes, which can prey on farm animals and pets. This story was produced with original reporting from Amy McDermott for the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, security briefings intended to update Congress on President Trump's decision to intervene in the Israel-Iran conflict have been abruptly canceled. The cancellation comes as several lawmakers continue pushing for a war powers resolution that would restrict the president's military authority. Congressman Jared Huffman, who represents the North Coast, shared a statement on social media just before news time, criticizing the administration's lack of transparency.
Right now, in the room right behind me here in the U.S. Capitol, we were supposed to be having a classified briefing so that we could ask some hard questions, get some actual information, hopefully, from this administration about what happened over the weekend. President Trump unilaterally taken our country into an active war between Iran and Israel without consulting with, getting approval from, or even mentioning to members of Congress that he was doing this. So look, Donald Trump has been lying and gaslighting for the last 72 hours, contradicting his own director of national intelligence, stepping all over members of his administration about what's going on, the extent of the damage from this bombing, whether we're seeking regime change. I mean, it is whiplash minute by minute, it seems. And we had a chance to ask his administration in the room behind me some tough questions and maybe get some answers. But no, this Republican Congress has canceled it. It's not happening. So there's your flip side. We've got an unhinged president who thinks he doesn't have to comply with the law, including Congress's Article 1 war-making authority. And we've got a Republican Congress who won't do anything to stand up for our constitutional role in this country. So we're going to keep fighting. The flip side for Democrats is I'm signing on to 2 war powers resolutions. We're going to keep using all the tools that we have to hold this president accountable, and we keep urging our Republican colleagues to do something. Be a Congress, for goodness sake. Stop acting like you're a wholly owned subsidiary of the Trump Company.
According to Politico, amid a fragile Trump-brokered ceasefire deal between Iran and Israel, Democratic leaders expressed outrage over the postponed briefing. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer called the decision outrageous, evasive, and derelict. saying senators deserve full transparency and that the administration has a legal obligation to brief Congress. House Speaker Mike Johnson downplayed the situation, saying, quote, "Nobody should read anything into the postponement," close quote, and that the White House respects Congress's constitutional war powers. Still, tensions remain high. Lawmakers say the administration had already bypassed standard congressional notification before launching airstrikes on Iran. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries also voiced concern and stated, quote, "What are the facts the Trump administration is trying to hide? The American people deserve to know," close quote. KMN News will continue to share updates.
HHS Secretary Kennedy announces voluntary agreement on oft-criticized prior authorization process blamed for delaying patient care. Sophia Rice-Elfany reports.
The country's largest health insurers have promised to make changes to their prior authorization process, which often delays or denies patients access to care. Prior authorization is a process used by health insurers that requires them to sign off on tests, procedures, or drugs before a patient can receive care. Insurers say the process helps prevent overuse and ensures patients receive the appropriate care. Medicaid Services Administrator Dr. Mehmet Oz and Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. held a press conference on Monday to explain what they are calling a common-sense solution to improve our healthcare system for patients, providers, and insurers alike. The reform will apply to coverage through work or the individual market, as well as Medicare Advantage plans and the state and federally funded Medicaid program. The voluntary pledge by insurers comes amid growing frustration from patients and doctors who warn that unnecessary delays in the administrative process can put lives at risk by giving a disease more time to progress untreated. Medicaid Administrator Oz asserts that streamlining the prior authorization process will not only directly benefit patients by getting faster care, but also lower administrative costs.
And you won't get that treatment after all the paperwork clears. You'll just get it because there won't be paperwork. We'll be streamlining it. Patients should not be waiting because bureaucratic hurdles are blocking their critical treatment. We want less red tape, and if we do that, we can cut tens of billions of dollars of administrative waste. That means more resources for patients. We see this as the first of a much larger opportunity in building a larger blueprint, because it's not just about prior authorization. It's a template for administrative simplification to take the paperwork out of the process and put patients over paperwork.
The high administrative costs are mostly due to the amount of paperwork sent back and forth between doctor offices, insurance companies, and patients. Companies have pledged to transition into an all-electronic paperwork system that would help with mailing costs as well as timeliness. They also plan to expand real-time responses between doctor and insurance offices so approval of treatments can be effectively streamlined. Medical review for denied requests will also be a part of the reform. By 2027, they say the process to submit a request will be as automatic as an online purchase. Although this is a step towards stronger consumer protections, some believe these commitments should be enacted into law. Anthony Wright, Executive Director of Families USA, said in a statement, "Consumer protection commitments should be in a statute and not just voluntary. We need stronger consumer protections against unfair delays or denials." He added, "We ultimately seek a system that puts the burden of appeals on the system rather than on the individual patient who is by definition already dealing with medical issues." Congressman and physician Dr. Greg Murphy was present at the conference and said that insurance companies will be held accountable in holding up their promise to the American people.
"I'm glad to hear that insurance companies have now understood what they've been doing is not right and that they're coming to the table to fix some of those errors. But I will say this, being a surgeon, I'm a skeptic. The proof is going to be in the pudding. Are they really going to step up and do things, or are they doing something to placate an audience? We're going to hold them to the fire continually to make sure they're doing what they're saying they're going to do and provide and get out of the room, get out of the space between the doctor and the patient, and let the doctor deliver the good care that they know how to do."
Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services will publish their finalized plan at the end of the summer. This is Sophia Rice-Elfany for Pacifica Radio News, KPFA.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media.
If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
And I'm Jordan Pangelinan.